welcome to the Philadelphia United Lodge of Theosophists. As is our custom, before we begin the meeting, we read the declaration and give the announcements. And this you can do yourself by picking up this little yellow pamphlet as you come in the door. You'll find it at the usher's table, along with another broadside of information to take with you. Now, we have a library. You passed it coming in. It's a reference library, and it's open on Wednesday nights at 5:30. Stays open till 7:30, and you may use it to familiarize yourself with the lessons for that particular evening, and also check out the straight line theosophical literature plus other references you find there. And in the middle room, as you pass through, you will see a book table, and usually someone is sitting at the book table to explain to you what the book's about, how much they cost, very, very reasonable, and sort of introduce you to the buildings if it's your first visit. This Sunday morning, it will be a short lecture. Other Sunday mornings, we have panels, discussions, and other forms of presentation. We remind you that what takes place in these rooms is an effort to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Pugh Judge. And as we stated, we have two meetings per week. I just mentioned the Wednesday night meeting begins promptly at 7:45, and it's over at 9:00. Today is December the 2nd, and the topic will be working on and working with cycles, since for the month of December, we'll be discussing the aspects of cycles and cyclic law. On Wednesday evenings, the work is In the Ocean of Theosophy by W.Q. Judge. And if you want to get a good beginning of groundwork and understanding the terminology used in these rooms, the meaning, and also how to construct for yourself some program whereby you can study these teachings daily. As stated, to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and W.Q. Judge. The Declaration states the policy of this lodge as independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It's loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement. It does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between the associates being that basis, and its aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. For those that first visit and they see a few get on the platform and begin to try to the best of their abilities, give out the teachings of the straight line theosophy, they're called associates. And many, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge, as set forth in its declaration, hereby record their desire to be enrolled as an associate. It being understood that such association calls for no obligation on their part other than that which, and repeat, I myself determine. In addition, when you pick this up, you'll see a list of the lodges located all over the earth. Now, as is the custom, we can recover everything that's of importance. As I said, this morning's talk will be working on and working with cycles. And as a preliminary reading to this talk this morning, we have a few words taken from the Key to Theosophy, thank you, which is a book, as you can see, by H.P. Blavatsky. It's another one of our texts we study in the course of time. Now, this reading, we ask you to simply flow with the words, and then the talk will begin. Before beginning and without an end, as base, eternal, and as sure to sure as fixed a power divine, which moves to good only its laws endure, it will not be contemned of anyone who thwarts it, loses, and who serves it, gains. The hidden good it pays with peace and bliss, the hidden ill with pains. It seeth everywhere and marketh all. Do right, it recompenseth. Do one wrong, the equal retribution must be made, though Dharma tarry long. It knows not wrath nor pardon. Utter true, its measures meet. Its faultless balance is ways. Times are as naught, tomorrow it will judge, or after many days. Such is the law which moves to righteousness, which none at last can turn aside or stay. The heart of it is love. The end of it is peace and consummation sweet. Obey.
Friends, this morning we will begin to explore together cycles and cyclic law. We'll begin by looking at why the doctrine of cycles is considered to be one of the most important teachings of theosophy. And we'll see that cycles are not just periods of time, as generally understood, but they are expressions of a universal law. As such, cycles have great impact on the life and development of everything in the universe itself. And so it must have a great impact on human beings as well. And we'll see, as that is the fact, human beings can either work with the law or they can work on the law, but they cannot ignore it. So we'll begin by getting a sense of why the doctrine of cycles is so important to the general understanding of the teachings of theosophy. And our first indication is if we just look at the titles for the month of December, we will see that cycles have an impact on our life, which is not only obvious, but sometimes not so obvious. And we'll look to see how it affects the cycle we call waking and sleeping, the various dream states we go through. We'll look at the relevance of cycles and what happens to the thinker, the soul, or the ego, if you will, after the death of the body and before the birth of a new body. And we'll look at in future weeks how the special qualities of the cycle of this time of year are celebrated and have been celebrated down through time by many peoples all over the world. And then we'll also look at this special time of year and the cyclic changes that occur in the next few months, which if we are aware of, we can take great advantage of. So let's begin then with a consideration of another way in which the doctrine of cycles is so important with us, and that is to realize that one cannot separate the doctrine of cycles from the doctrine of reincarnation. And for those of you who have been coming Sunday morning regularly, you know that last month we looked at these two laws of reincarnation and karma and the various ways in which they affect not only human life, but all of life. But this doctrine of cycles is also one of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy. And by a principle, we do not just mean an intellectual concept, but a truth which has not only practical application in the everyday affairs of our life, but in our moral life and ethical life as well. So obviously it's a very important consideration. The next point to realize is that cycles are not just periods of time as commonly understood by many. Now we know that we reckon time by certain cycles, and we speak of the 24-hour day, and we have various periods of that day and periods of the month and periods of the year, but we understand time as we reckon it in that way as periods of time is relative, because if we were on a different planet such as Jupiter or Mars, with the year there and the day there and the month there and even the seasons there would be a different period of time relevant to us. So cycles are more than just periods of time. They are actually expressions of a universal tendency for the repetition, recurrence of what has occurred before, or the reappearance or manifestation of that which was hidden before. Now, as said, we can see periods of time, but we also see repetition of events. We see certain things that occur every day in every year in our life, like our birthday, or certain anniversaries, or even celebrating the new year. Certain historical events within nations are repeated periodically at different times. But then if we look at nature itself, we see there's a repetition in the very being of our nature. Our heart beats at a certain rate, or we breathe at a certain rate, the rates of our this metabolism and the reproduction of our cells go on at a certain rate. There's even a definite cycle or period of time by which there is a repetition in the development of an infant in the womb and as it proceeds throughout life. So not only there is a repetition, but there is a recurrence of the event. It's just not chaotic. There's a repetition of the tendency and the experience that people have with that. But here's an aspect that we may not usually consider. Cycles also bring back to us the manifestation of something that was previously hidden. Now, if we look around us now, we see that the leaves are falling, and if you spent hours this summer planting annuals, you know that by now they're all sort of withered, and there's no evidence of them, and the very bulbs of the tulips and the daffodils we appreciate so much of spring, we don't see them, and yet they are there in the earth and hidden. And we know that under a certain cycle in the spring, that which is unmanifested or hidden to us will come forth again. And we also see it, we say the sun rises or falls, and we don't see the sun certain parts of the day. It's not manifested to us because of the rotation of the earth, we understand, and then it comes forth again into manifestation. Same way with the moon. There are certain cycles. We just had the past few days a very brilliant full moon, and as well we know there are times when we do not seem to be able to see the moon because of the shadow cast on it by the earth, but then it comes back into manifestation for us visibly. But this tendency is also true of other aspects of our life. That which is hidden in our nature, inner tendencies of thought and feeling, things that we didn't even suspect that were there or we had long forgotten, can come forth again and again or repeat themselves and almost catch us off guard if we do not understand them and that they are there. So cycles then are more than just periods of time. So if we look at them, we see that they are actually expressions of a universal law that affects everything, every being, the life and evolution of everything and every being in the universe. In fact, it affects the universe itself. The universe is actually a word that, if we translate its underlying roots, means one cycle or one revolution, or one turning. So the universe itself is under this cyclic law. So what do we mean by it affects the life of a thing? Well, we know that every being that we know of in the different departments of nature that is alive, we say, has its period of birth, development, growth, decay, and death. And then we also see a re-embodiment or rebirth of that being in nature. And so cycles govern the frequency, the duration, the characteristics that distinguish the birth, development, decay, and death. And actually science makes a study and can study the different ways species express and human beings express this cyclic law. And our psychologists understand that in the evolution and development of a human being, there are certain predictable cycles of behavior and development that the human being goes through at each of these stages. Not just our modern psychologists understood this, but the ancient psychologists understood it as well. So in addition to that, we know that when we speak of the life of a being, there is not only the physical manifested life, but there's also the inner life of the being, which is not so obvious to us. But we know it's there. If we look at our own nature, we are more than the mask other people see or that we see when we look at ourselves in the mirror. We know there's a whole world of the inner being of our life made up of our hidden aspirations and secrets and intentions and memories, and that these themselves are subject to cyclic and recurring law. And also, when we say the evolution of a being, cycles don't just bring back events and beings. but it's more like a spiral. There's something within our nature that, at the same time there is a recurrence, is ever pushing us forward to better expression of our nature. So when the tendency or the being or the event comes back, it comes back at a little bit more sophisticated and developed expression, almost a spiral rather than a cycle on the same plane. So we see that in the development of beings. So then this is a universal law that has great impact in everything in nature, so obviously it has a great impact on our human life. And it does so in a number of ways. We'll just touch on a few, and there are many others which we can talk about in our question and answer period together. But the cycle of reincarnation, for example, that is the central teaching of theosophy, that as immortal thinkers or immortal souls, the essential, the real human being reincarnates and in different bodies, in different nations and races, again and again and again, through a long period of evolution and development. It is under cyclic law that we are impelled to do this. But we do not only come back as individuals. We've formed close associations and ties, very deep ties, with other individuals and groups of individuals. So the souls that make up a family, a nation, a race, also come back into life again and again under cyclic law, and very often play out and re-express the very same events, tendencies that had occurred in the previous life. But hopefully, in the meantime, there's been development, so they don't necessarily react and respond the same way, but in a better way that drives forward the growth and intelligence of all the intelligent beings we incarnate with. So that's just reincarnation. And so we can trace various cycles in the affairs of humanity as the result of this returning of souls together from the past. But also, as we think and impress as beings all the conscious life around us, there is a tendency for that impression to also recur. So we set up impressions that determine the way we think about things, the way we feel about things, the way we respond to things emotionally, intellectually, morally. In the East, in the tradition, they call these the skandhas or tendencies. But these tendencies come back as well to make up our moral, our psychic, our intellectual, and our physical nature. And they too come back as a cycle of sensation and impression, which we feel. And we can feel this even in one life, even through the course of year. And there's a whole science of biorhythms applied not only physically but psychologically, which help an individual begin to track the cyclical return of their moods, of their habits, of their tendencies as they live their lives. The other interesting aspect is that as individuals begin to express and react to these recurring tendencies, and groups of individuals begin to act in concert the same way, because we don't exist here alone, we are affected and affect other beings around us, we see not only individual cycles in the return of these tendencies, but we see national and racial and larger human cycles of these returning tendencies. And we'll have time to go into some of them later. So being that we are affected by these, that they have a great impact on our human nature, we only have two options. We can work with the inevitable cyclic law of nature, or we can work on it. We cannot refuse to follow it. You may think that you can go out into a raging storm and it will not affect you, the waves will not overwhelm you, but the cyclical waves, if you do not know how to protect yourself and work with it, will bring about your demise. So you cannot ignore it. You have to deal with it or own it. And so if we look at that, we can say that we work with the cycle because we cannot escape this universal tendency. The universe itself is periodically expressed under the cyclic law. But we can work on it because we are spiritual beings and we can set up tendencies that affect the duration of the cycle, how quickly it will come back, and how it will affect us, and the very characteristics, tendencies that will bring to us. So we're not completely helpless within it. We can have a great influence on the quality and the duration of the cycle. We'll give a few examples in that in the next few minutes. But we just want you to get the basic idea that when we teach cycles, it's a universal law that is around us. It affects all beings. We live in an ocean of life. All beings are acting and interacting and are subject to this law. And we're born along that ocean. And like the adepts themselves said, we can only influence a few of those minor currents with our thought, with our creative power. So let's take a few minutes then to look at some examples of how we can work with cycles. Well, very obvious. We know we have periods of activity and rest. We call them our waking and sleeping hours. And we do this all the time. We know that certain cyclic activities will come to us on a daily basis or certain times of the year or certain times of the week, and we prepare ourselves to act accordingly under that cycle. So that's very obvious to us. But it's also true that during periods of rest, as we'll see next week, in our what we call our deep sleep or dream sleep, there is a cycle going on there that if we understand the cycle, we have to go to sleep. And it, as we are now, we dream. We cannot help that. But we can work with it if we understand what's going on. We certainly work with sleep. We don't try to, when we feel ourselves exhausted, we follow that law. We allow ourselves to go to sleep or try to help ourselves get to sleep because we know if we don't sleep, we'll suffer physically or emotionally. So we have to work that with that law. But it goes beyond that, really. We also work with the seasons. We know that there's winter, spring, summer, fall, and we plant at certain times and we reap at certain times. And for those of you who've made a study and enjoy reading the Farmer's Almanac, you know it's just full of lore and interesting facts about the signs of nature and how they know certain things are going to recur. And it's called the Farmer's Almanac because the farmers depend on the cyclical recurrence of those signs to know how to plant and sow and reap their crops. So we can do that too. Now the adepts who have a much larger view of this cyclic law tell us that not only this law we can work with as individuals, but it affects the nations and races as well. And they speak of four great ages in the development of a race. And by race, we are not speaking of the outer physical features of race, the way it's commonly spoken of, but the human race, the various stages of development it goes through intellectually, morally, physically, spiritually, and psychically. So there are various stages, and it's we know classically the ancient Greeks spoke of a golden age, a silver age, a bronze age, an iron age. Well, we are in the so-called iron age or dark age, which is a long period of time, which in the Eastern system is said to last for 420,000 years. A long time, but it's actually one of the shortest of the cycles. And what's interesting about this cycle is even though it brings back to humanity the most materialistic of the tendencies, and we feel them definitely in this time of our development. It brings them back, but brings them back much more repetitively. Things that we do or try to accomplish at this particular cycle come back under cyclic law much more quickly. So cycles are not, the durations or cycles are not written in stone, so to speak. They vary according to cycles themselves. So if we try to set up a cause to be beneficial and helpful to humanity or others in this time, or taking advantage of this cycle, the results come back to us much more quickly than they would in, say, the golden or the silver age. So knowing that, we can expect that things are going to be tough for a long time. But we can also know that we can accomplish more within that cycle if we work with it. The other aspect of that law is that the zodiac itself, we know you're familiar with the zodiac, but the complete revolution of the signs of the zodiac, as we have the precession of the equinoxes, takes about 25,000 years. And so the going through those different houses or signs of the zodiac can be divided into different times. So around the time that Jesus lived, the earth, it said, has passed through the sign of Pisces. And around the beginning of the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, we pass through the sign, or beginning to pass through the sign of Aquarius, hence the age of Aquarius. And according to the teachings of Theosophy, this new cycle of Aquarius, the water bearer, is marked by a upsurging, particularly in the Western lands, of all the psychic, higher and psychic tendencies. Now, we work with that. We cannot prevent that. That's going to happen. That's inevitable. But knowing that, we can be on the lookout, because as it comes forward, if we don't know it's there, it can be full of danger. But if we know and how to recognize it and develop our mental and moral control over that psychic nature, we can learn to use it to its best ability and restrain its destructive tendencies. Because we all know that every human capacity can be used for good or ill. So there's different ways in which we can work with the inevitable law of cycles. But how about working on cycles? We said that we are impelled by this universal law of re-embodiment or reincarnation to come back again and again. But even within that, we can work with that cycle. And Theosophy teaches that there is a general average, because of the nature of the souls of humanity and its spiritual nature at this time, the duration, the average duration between incarnation of egos in general is about 1,000 to 1,500 years. But even there, there's exception or there's specific consideration, because we can act in a certain way, set up certain tendencies where that cycle between births can be much shorter, very short, almost immediate. And we can act in certain other ways in which it will extend for thousands of years beyond that. So that's just one example of how we can work with or on a law that's previously established. The same way with karma. Karma is an aspect of a cyclic law. You can't separate karma from cyclic law. Karma is the bringing back to the center of a disturbance. We act, or a being acts, it sets up a disturbance in the harmony that pervades the universe, and there's a reaction, a returning of that effect to the center where the disturbance occurs. So we experience that as a karmic effect. That's a cycle. And it will come back again and again and again until the disturbance is settled. You can see this just by dropping a petal in a pail of water. What happens? The ripples go out, they come in. They go out, they come in. They go out, they come in. Certain number of cycles. And then there's flatness. Open your eyes, stare for a few minutes into a bright light bulb. Close your eyes, the image returns on the retina, goes away, returns, go away, until eventually settles out. Can't escape that law. But we can, according to theosophy, if we have a certain tendency or habit that will come back to us, especially a fault, under cyclic law, it said that the tendency will come back until it works itself out. It will take about 3 lifetimes. We can discuss why that might be in another time, but it takes about 3 lifetimes, unless we take up measures to counteract it. So we don't necessarily have to suffer a certain fault in our nature repetitively if we take up certain methods right now that will mitigate it. So there's another way we can work with the cycle. And finally, the most immediate and obvious to us way we can work with cycles is the same way we're conducting this meeting, or the way we eat, or the way we sleep. We know that we should try to get regular hours of sleep and rest so the body functions naturally. And there's even a whole category of sleep disorders by people who work shifts at night, and they're working 3 days a week one shift and 3 days a week another shift, and it throws all their wake sleeping cycles off and they don't function as well, so they got to keep that regulated. The same way with our activity, our diet and our exercise, we know we should do it regularly and cyclically and so forth. Well, ideally we should do that. So the same thing is, we can work with this cyclic law in this way. If we think or feel in a certain way, we cannot prevent the recurrence of that feeling. It will come back. So if we have a tendency to brood, or regret, or doubt, or harbor feelings of revenge, or mistrust, those impress our very nature, and they will come back as surely as that the impression on the light of the light bulb on our retina came back again and again. If we left it alone, it would eventually wear out, but what happens is when it comes back from memory, we dwell on it again and charge it up again. It's almost like looking in the light bulb again. So knowing that these cycles of recurring tendencies will come back, when they do come back, instead of supercharging or re-energizing them with our negative thought, we recognize them for what they are and force ourselves to think or feel the opposite. We set up with it in association a new impression. So when that old tendency comes back, and it will, it brings back with it the new impression. So each time it comes back, and each time we recharge it with a better impression, a higher impression, eventually it wears out to be replaced by the new feeling. And we know this. Every time, very often people at this time of year, they sort of look at it almost with mixed feelings. We know this in our discussions with other folks, that they enjoy the year, but it also brings back certain memories of people they lost or unpleasant things. So they look at it with mixed feelings. Well, that's what we're talking about, mixed feelings that come back. But if we learn that we can take it, work with and on this law of cycles by setting up new patterns of thought and feeling and tendency, they will come back and we will be no longer under their influence. By this, we can slowly take charge of our evolution and build better tendencies, habits, and characters that will continue to evolve over time. So this law of cycles is obviously not only interesting from an intellectual point of view, but every one of us can take this law and begin, as soon as we walk out, applying it practically and morally in our lives. Because even the moral decisions we make come back to affect us. We speak of that slippery slope. You know, once you do the wrong thing, the tendency to do the wrong thing sort of snowballs. It's the same way. Once you begin to make choices, choosing the better for the dearer and building that tendency, even though the temptation may come back again, the tendency to choose the right thing, the better thing, comes back stronger every time. So we'll stop here and leave the rest of the duration of the meeting for your questions and comments. Yes, in the back, please.
Simple question. The Iron Age that you mentioned that we're in, the 420-some-thousand years, being that we're in such a dire strait of existence right now, particularly with the planet Earth and pollution and sickness and disease and yada yada, it doesn't feel realistic to me that this planet will continue existing at this rate of decay for another 420,000 years. And if we continue to pollute the waters and the atmospheres and, you know, nuclear waste, whatever, how do you reconcile that? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to fix that?
Yeah, very good point. So, yes, there are this larger cycle, okay? We also spoke of the moving into the age of Aquarius, where there's an upsurge of our higher psychic and our lower psychic. So the psychic nature is the way we feel. There can be an expansion of our feeling of oneness and connectedness and love for others and humanity and nature around us, or we can distort and pervert that into all sorts of abuses. We see that too. And is that not the crisis of our times? Which way will we go? And your point is well taken, that if the way it seems is that if we continue along our path, we would destroy ourselves. But fortunately, we're not the only ones here on this planet, and there are those, there are many who, because of the way they act and feel and their powers, they have a lot to say too and a lot of influence as well. And things can change. But of course, we have to work with that law. Now, when we speak, but it is true that we could reach a point where as humanity, if we act in such and such a way over a long period of time, we reach a point where no amount of salvation or effort from other beings or can prevent us from having to go through that destruction, and we can destroy ourselves as a civilization. This has happened a number of times before. And it is said that those who chose or did not have anything to do with that are not swept away, but are warned in time and are able to escape that destruction. So the earth in the past may be destroyed in some aspect or some area, but it is also regenerated and restored in a different area, and there can be movements. So there's that to consider. It's a complicated question, obviously could take up a whole meeting in itself, but a very good question. Yes.
In reference to that it's a psychic time that our psychic nature is becoming more aware, and we expose ourselves to height and electronics that sort of intensifies that portion of our psychic nature. We often feel unstable on that. We are such sensory input, and we don't know what's true and what's false. We become confused. And then, you know, one thing leads to another, and anxiety sets in. So oftentimes, I think you mentioned that what we concentrate on affects us greatly.
Yes. So we said that this is a cycle as we enter this age of Aquarius, or it actually corresponds with the end of the first 5,000 years of Kali Yuga, the Dark Age, and the teachings say that even within that longer Dark Age of 420,000 years, there are relatively smaller cycles of light and dark relative. So the end of that 5,000 years, the beginning of the Aquarius, Age of Aquarius, we get more psychic in nature. Well, what does that mean? It means we become more sensitive and receptive. Well, we can become more sensitive and receptive and aware of the plight of others. And certainly, as a result of that, or fed by that, is the development of our mass communications and media. We can be in touch all over the world instantaneously with others, which only enhances our sensitivity and is, in fact, a result of our increased sensitivity. It's because of our increased desire to be in tune with and in touch with the wide world around us, that we brought forth these instruments. It's also for because of our selfishness and desire and a distortion of our psychic tendencies that we also bring forth methods of mass destruction. So we always have that choice. But it is because of that sensitivity and receptivity. So we have to be careful and be very selective in what recognizing that we are more sensitive and receptive to life around us now. We have to be aware of the people, the situations, the circumstances, the influences, chemical, biological, social, that we place ourselves in contact with. And just as we choose the food we will eat, or the water will we drink, or the air we will breathe, we have to choose the situations that we will put ourselves in association with, because we will be affected by them and will affect those others as well. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. There's also a cycle, especially among the youth, of ecological awareness, environmental awareness. There was a time when everyone thought that we had unlimited resources, especially with the founding of this country. It was a virgin territory that was, there were people who were living here, but they were living in harmony with nature. And now there's a tendency to want to go back and live. There's a return of that cycle of wanting to live in harmony with nature. And don't you think that, would the philosophy, we should say that anything that man has created, he could also figure a way out of it? If we've created pollution, aren't we intelligent enough to know how to clean it up as well? Yes. Is it just a matter of where we're putting our focus now?
So the question here relates to, in a way, to the conditions we find ourselves and what control we have over them. So here we are, we read the paper, we listen to the news, and we hear all the horrible things going on in the environment around us. And we hear predictions that we do not have sustainable resources, and if we keep ourselves going in this direction, we will directly impair civilization as we know it may come to an end, because we don't have enough fossil fuels, or what fuels we do have we're misusing, or we're deforesting the forest. So we hear all these things. From the perspective of cycles as taught in Theosophy, we need to realize that we've been through this before, that the conditions are here as a result of the very ways we've acted in the past, that we've created miserable conditions in the past, and we've suffered from them, and we find ourselves back in this life, and we bring back with us not only the knowledge of the past, but the lower tendencies as well. We recreate, redesign, reestablish on the world around us the very ways we acted before. We do this collectively and individually. And anybody who's looked at themselves honestly can kick themselves from time to time, because they see themselves making the same mistakes over and over again and don't know how to get out of it. We do that as humanity as well. So the point is that recognizing that, we can say, well, if we've been here, if we've created these conditions, but then we individually and collectively have the power to change, to alter. Now, the fact is that we do have, quote, unlimited resources. We just don't know how to use them, because if we think of the sun and its source of solar energy, for us, relatively, it's unlimited. And the philosophy thinks of powers and forces that are known and can be used for energy that we don't even dream about yet, but have been used in the past by humanity. And in using those, we practically destroyed ourselves. So we do have, in a sense, unlimited resources. Our problem is we do not know it, and the resources we do have, we misuse and abuse. And there's an unfair distribution of those resources because of selfishness. That's the problem, not the resources. We have to look at ourselves as the problem. Yes.
Although cycles aren't always on based on time, is there any way that we could possibly recognize cycles without the application of time? I mean, those two seem to be wedded.
Are there ways in which we can understand cycles without the application of time? Okay. Well, look around at nature. In the kingdoms of nature, we see the operation of instinct. In our neighborhood, a certain flock of ducks walk through the neighborhood every year at the same time. They didn't have watches. And we know that certain oysters will open and close at the same time every day or every night, even if you move them to Michigan. Yeah, they don't have. So nature responds to cycles even without knowledge of what we call time. And we can be so engaged in an activity that we say we lose all track of time, but eventually we start getting hungry and we become aware that it might be lunchtime or dinner time. Well, it's not a timepiece that told us, it's our own, the cyclical nature of our own being that made us aware of that. So just like the kingdoms in the lower nature, we're part of that, and we have our own inner clocks. The heavens themselves, or the zodiac itself, is a clock that if you understood it, you could understand when certain tendencies and events would recur that would affect humanity, just as we can look at the clock on the wall there and say we know when it gets a certain time, we're going to feel hungry again, not because the clock on the wall made us hungry, because the clock on the wall informs of the time period in which we're likely to experience a certain event in ourselves. Yes, in the back.
So then those are intuitive.
Intuitive and, or instinctive, yes. In the animal kingdom, we call it instinct. In the human kingdom, we might call it subjective and sometimes direct knowledge or intuitive. But if there's a certain instinctive knowledge there as well. We know if we study ourselves, we know there are certain times of the day when we can be more productive in mental and physical effort, or a certain time of the year when we're more productive. We're going to learn, actually, as we move through this month's discussion of cycles, we're going to become even more aware of that. And this is a time when we like to talk about this subject because so much is going on in nature at this time that we can take advantage of. And under this law of cycles. Yes?
As we talk about this subject, the one thing that registers with it is the only thing that recognizes this contrast or these cycles or these periods of time is the mind. The mind is what is like a witness to all of this. And even though we do feel it, what is the mind's part in all this? Because why are we here? You know, what is this all for? You know, is there a reasoning to the seeming proverbial madness?
Mm-hmm. By the question is the role of the mind, and by here we're not just speaking of our faculty of self-conscious awareness or our faculty of intellect, but we're speaking of ourselves as thinkers. Mind beings. We all know that we can change our thoughts, we can change our ideas, we can change our creeds, we can change our likes and dislikes. We can't change the fact that we think and we feel and we make decisions, because that's who we are as essentially as human beings. We are thinkers. Theosophy would say we are egos, we are souls incarnated, because that thinker exists prior and has brought forth the body as an instrument it will use, and continues to exist as a thinker after the body dies, as we say, and the personality resolves into its different elements. So why are we here? Well, we are here because we can't help it. We are subject as thinkers, as beings to everything else in nature. The universe itself, after a great period of rest or pralaya, comes forth and again and again. Scientists are begin call this like the Big Bang, and then of course the Big Return, I guess, that everything returns back to the big shrinking, I guess, but the big everything returns back to the way it was and then comes forth again. We can't help that. We're part of that universe. But as mind beings, we can recognize that we're here as thinkers for a purpose, and that purpose is inherent in the very life we live. We are all interconnected. We are all part of the whole. So our purpose here is to gain awareness of that and better ability to fulfill that purpose as mind beings, and in the meantime, to raise the intelligence of all the beings around us so they are more aware of it and we can all work together on it. So we can have a better cycle or purpose in the future. There is no beginning or ending to the process of evolution, to the re-embodiment of the substance we use, and to the coming forth of higher degrees of intelligence. All that can have a beginning and ending is the particular form of expression it takes, or the particular form, way in which we think and feel at a time can end. It can end painfully, or it can end by choice. Yes?
We haven't heard the term rhythm.
Rhythm.
Mentioned. Could you tie that term in with our topic?
Well, rhythm is the way we perceive the operation of cycles. We see rhythms of sounds. We call them notes or tones. We see rhythm of vibrations we call colors. We perceive rhythms of sensations on our passages of our nose and mouth, and we call them taste and smell. We sense the universe around us through our physical senses by the rhythm or the vibrations it makes on our sensory organs. But we also see other rhythms to life. We see that there's a music or a rhythm of the heavens. Even the wandering planets seem to do so under a certain pattern. And the comets, the comets may go out of manifestation. We don't see them for 70, 80, 120 years. And yet, predictably, they come back and show themselves again. There's a certain rhythm, repetition, recurrence, vibration. And as there are cycles all around us, we are immersed all around us in an ocean of vibration. We just happen to be more sensitive to it now than we were before. Yes, in the back.
That comment brought to mind something else. That very lovely reading at the beginning of the meeting this morning.
Yes.
Wasn't that an excerpt from Light of Asia?
Yes, it was from
the rhythm of language and ideation.
Yes, yes.
So that's actually that poem.
Yes, okay. The rhythm of life. And we have that in the Bible, of course. For everything, there is a season, mm-hmm. and for every purpose, a time under heaven. And of course, you know, made into a very well-known popular song, and then we have it in our shows, The Rhythm of Life. I mean, knowledge of this is a universal part of our culture. It's just within the philosophy of theosophy, we can see just how far it goes and how much control we have over it. We'll have one time for one more thought.
Yeah, just briefly, in order to reinforce this lesson of cycles, isn't it important to go out into nature, whether it be in a park or somewhere, kind of just to meditate on nature and to maybe leave all the electronic devices behind and just try to observe the cycles? Yes. Wouldn't that help to reinforce the lesson?
Absolutely, if you have that opportunity. It's one thing to talk about the lower kingdoms, another thing to be on the back of a horse. And really feel the rhythm of that being and its intelligence. I mean, it's one thing to talk about it intellectually, it's another thing to experience. So get in contact with nature, of course, learn from it. The greatest in teachers are the nature around us. But you know, you don't even have to go out of your room or out of your backyard or out of your own nature. You can study cycles and rhythms within yourself. of course, you should be doing both. We learn from the nature around us and the nature within us. So as we said, next week we're going to look at dreams and visions of the night as they fall under this category of cycles and cyclic law. And then on Wednesday we are going on in our study of the constitution of the human being, the total of which is affected by this law of cycles, particularly looking at the astral body. So our meeting's adjourned.
What's that?
I have my own private question. I want to ask a question about psychic.